time when things are shifting. There's gonna be a new world order out there.
Said on several occasions that I wouldn't comment about the recent congressional hearings on the Iran-Contra matter.
What's up, y'all? Welcome to the What Is Truth podcast. I am your host, Wheezy. Sorry for the little hiatus. My mother passed away a couple of weeks ago. Had to take some time off, and I know I promised that David McGowan book, and that had to be put on the back burner for the meantime, but I'm going to try to get it out this weekend. Today should be a rather exquisite show. I have Mr. New York Patriot, also known as Nick.
How are you? Thank you for having me on.
And Lisa.
You can just call me Nick, too. So that's what
all right, Nick. They are from the Occult Rejects, a rather exquisite channel, pretty big on YouTube, surprisingly. A lot of people have been banished, and you guys are thriving there, so that's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
But before we go any further, if you guys don't mind giving a little bit of background, whoever wants to go first.
You want to go first, Lisa?
Okay. Yeah. So my background, I did a lot of work in academia, spent a lot of time doing research, mainly in anatomy, physiology, got into diseases, a lot of immunology, stress physiology. So my background is research, basic science, kind of learning how to do that. And so I had become a fan of the show. And so whenever he would do topics on biology, or I think he had mentioned Lyme disease once, I sent him a bunch of stuff and I was like, yeah, no, you're right on it. And so we started collaborating on some other ideas, and then he wanted to do an eye series and I was like, yes. And then we kept collaborating after that. But yeah, and then just research in general. So whenever we do a topic, I mean, I just wholly dive in, because that's kind of my training, is just pretty much research it until, you know, it bleeds, I guess, right? Like that, until you have something, and it's proven pretty fruitful, I think. So, yeah.
Awesome. I like that. It was well said.
All right.
Thanks.
Yes. And I guess I'll go next. I have my own show, The NY Patriot and the Occult Rejects. Basically, my story was that I ended up eventually joining a secret society. I was into occultism, and I guess, like, you know, even growing up young, I was into paranormal. I believed in ghosts. I believed in UFOs, aliens, and all that stuff. So I was, like, pretty open, I guess, to, like, just weird stuff anyway. But eventually when I started getting into conspiracies, I was very much drawn to, like, the occultism and the secret society stuff behind it. I was, like, a big fan back in the day of, like, Jordan Maxwell, Santos Bonacci, David Icke, Mark Passio, you know, all those people. And at one point I was just like, you know, I'm studying all this stuff and chasing all these names and chasing all these orders, but I still don't know what the hell magic really is, you know? And I was like, maybe I should start getting into it. So I started getting some books. I spoke to a couple of people that I remember from school that were, like, kind of into, like, Wicca and that stuff when I was younger. And they kind of put me in the right direction for what I was looking for, a little bit more ceremonial magic. So I started getting into stuff like that, and then started even realizing in books you'll find contradictions on, like, the same things. So I was like, oh, man, like, I can't even trust these books to be correct. So I started looking to see if there was any secret societies near me. I'll be totally honest, I would have rather probably joined the Golden Dawn, but there was none around me. But there happened to be an OTO lodge about 25 minutes away from me, with traffic maybe. So I was like, I guess that will be the one I try out. And 5-6 years later, I was there. Well, I ended up staying.
Cool.
But yeah, eventually I left. I was not happy, which I just didn't think that the place had anything to offer me. I didn't think it actually really was a good vibe, really. I didn't think it really gave the image of magic, or I guess put it this way. I mean, as much as they're very open to the public and people can, you know, find them and contact them, I guess, like, when it really comes to, in my opinion, real magic, they will not talk about any of that shit at all. So, like, for people to keep going, they're ignorant and dumb to what it is. I just figured, like, there's no reason for me to be here. Nobody else is going to really go too far. You're just going to become a slave. I honestly felt that the place itself was kind of a psyop, so I left. You know, and then I eventually started my own show because of my experiences and understanding of occultism. I wanted to start podcasting.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I've always been intrigued by things of those nature. And like I mentioned before, I'm rather ignorant in this subject. So it's awesome to be doing a show on it. And I want to thank the lovely Missy T for setting this up. She's the one very instrumental in setting all this up. But there's a running joke. every time something sketchy is happening, she's always like, it's the Masons, bro. Masons and butt fucking. And so it's just a joke. But
oh, yeah.
I've been curious about it. I think my first, curiosity into Masonry was during a Simpsons episode. I don't know if you remember when I think Homer was trying to get into the...
No, I don't think I have a
story. Or if I Mason Lodge or something.
Really?
It was the Stonemasons, I believe. And they make him run around butt naked and they whip his ass and everything. It's a funny episode. It's hilarious. I mean,
like first degree.
yeah. And, and that was when the Simpsons were still funny. You know, like...
Yeah,
I think it was 1997 when that episode came out. But that was like the first time. But, you know, I think ever since then, it was just like, there's nothing to that. It's all loony. Who the hell would join that shit? And now that I'm deeper into conspiracies, like, I'm like, you know, I don't have a religious leaning, or I'm not spiritual by any means, but the more I go into these rabbit holes, just because I don't believe it doesn't mean they don't exist. You see these rituals and you hear about these secret societies openly. You see this symbolism, and that's what I want to get into later on, what exactly this symbolism means. I hear other shows talking about it, but I'd love to get your expertise on the matter.
Sure. We could probably both speak on that eventually, like even with the eye stuff that we both did. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was something that I think is... you know, and we're going to go back to the eyes eventually, and even in the brain. But my honest opinion, I think she'll even agree that there's a lot of occult symbolism that I think is actually referring all back to our eyes and our brain. I think.
Yeah, you know, we did a couple of digs into some old occultists, and they were heavily into like an all-encompassing type of learning, in that they were knowing everything about biology, they were knowing anything about magic, alchemy. I mean, every topic they knew about. And then now, if you go into academia, you don't hear about that anymore. It's strict, you know, everything is divided, no one is talking to each other, anything like that. The whole aspect of the metaphysical, or even the paranormal, spiritual, or anything having to do with that is completely left out. And you don't see that back in even before the Middle Ages in antiquity. And so they were making all these advances by combining all of the disciplines. And Nick and I have seen that you see all of these, what they call polymaths, they knew so much, you see all these advances happening, and then you see the separation. And then almost kind of like a slowing down of the progression of knowing in general.
Yeah. And that's like a thing, you know, she mentioned polymath. That's even like another thing, like how, like, you know, back in the day, and like even, you know, the 1200s probably to like the 16, 1700s, it seemed to be like a big thing. And it was like, if you wanted to understand something, you had to understand it from like all seven different types of like ways of looking at it, like the liberal arts, you know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. That's all to give you an answer. They're not supposed to be separate things of study that are alone by themselves. They're actually supposed to really entwine together. And you get a lot of occultists from back in the day even kind of pointing at that. And the whole thing is that, like, that included biology.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of alchemists, which is, you know, weird. It must have been something that was, like, going on from, like, you know, I guess, like, the 1200s, like, the 16th to 1700s, and then something got screwed up after that. Because around that time, you had alchemists that were even coming out and saying this has nothing to do with actually turning stones into something. This is all inside the body. Mm. And then somehow that got lost in, I don't know, but... that is, like, something that I think me and her have been trying to heavily hit on since the Eyeball series and on. And it was something that I actually wanted to touch on when I first started my show in the Occult Rejects. It was just like I didn't understand biology good enough. And I really didn't want to start off with the show, like, kind of running on that, because, like, in my opinion, you'd have to catch a lot of people who are already, like, pretty deep into this stuff. It wasn't going to appeal to people who are, like, interested in understanding it and don't know much. So I knew it was kind of be, like, a progressive thing to eventually get into. And eventually, like she had said, I think I was talking about American Horror Story, because one of the last seasons that they did, they were focusing on, like, deers and Long Island and Lyme disease and AIDS. And it just seemed, like, very shady and weird, because I was like, I lived on Long Island. They're talking about stuff that, like, really happened, you know? And she had hit me up, I think, and started going into this whole, like, stuff about the deers. And I'd asked her, I was like, yo, are you able to, like, cover the eyes? Like, do you know how the eyes work and the brain works? And, like, you know, layman's terms that you could explain it for people. And she was like, yeah. So, like, ever since then, I'd have to say, like, I've kind of, like, I took advantage of that. And I was like, well, you know what? Now I got somebody who can explain the parts that I really would screw up and just sound very ignorant to, you know, so I can let her handle that and I'll stick to the symbolism. And I think, you know, the ideas of alchemy, what's actually going on. And I pointing tarot or showing tarot and stuff too, I think is all kind of showing the eyes and the brain. But I'd say for, like, the last 8 months, probably, that's probably something that we've been heavily pointing at. You know, even with sound and music, mm-hmm. You know, it's very envisions. Like, there's a lot of people we've been covering and it hasn't even come out yet. But, like, Michael Myers and Hildegard and, like, a lot of, like, old, like, saints or just old occultists and alchemists, they were very big on, like, music as well. And they were even, like, creating multimedia back in the day where, like, they were making books that had, like, visions, drawings that you were supposed to meditate on, and then music to play and stuff to even sing to. So, like, it was really, like, a whole big experience, and I think there's something behind that. So I've been trying to get back to that stuff that seems to have somehow disappeared around the mid-1700s.
But like Nick was saying, some of these old occultists, they were touching upon all the senses to be activated all at the same time. And on top of that, as well as the you know, mental, the spiritual, and the physical, because of the senses, right? And so that would take you, and then obviously do the meditative state and take you into that alchemical change that everyone was seeking, whether it was the Garden of Eden or whether it was a higher power or evolving as a human being. I mean, that's what they wanted. They wanted an all-encompassing experience in order to progress themselves, or even the UC moments where they want society to move forward as a whole, as a more learned species. So
that's interesting. Yeah. I guess, and maybe you guys, this is where you guys are still trying to dig in a little deeper, but I guess the answer is why, like, what's the agenda? What's the purpose behind all this? Because I definitely, a lot of the stuff you were pointing out, it kind of intertwines with a lot of other stuff, like even old world technology and things along those lines. I mean, I've often, and it's funny, I want to talk about the symbolism, because I use, you know, my ancestors were Mesoamerican folk. I use a lot of Mesoamerican art in a lot of my logos and stuff like that. And every now and then some goofball was like, oh, he's probably satanic. Look at the symbolism. I'm like, oh my God, man, you don't even, you don't even understand Mesoamerican. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what makes me brush it off when I hear stupid comments like that. I'm like, shut the hell up, man. You're ignorant. But then, and the reason I'm bringing that up, I mean, I've often brought up the, when you go to, in Mexico, I think it's Chichen Itza, there's a pyramid there. If you stand in front of it and clap, the clap bounces, the sound of the clap bounces back in the same exact sound of a Quetzal bird, which was a revered bird for the Maya. And so it's all these cultures throughout the world had some kind of advanced technology that for whatever reason has been hidden or lost.
I don't believe that was done by accident. They knew what they were doing.
Yeah, yeah.
But they wanted that effect for sure.
Yes.
I think.
So I guess going back to what I was trying to get at is the predictive programming, I'm sure, is all part of this. You know, I listened to your show you did on talismans and
I was an old
sigils. Yeah. Great episode, man. I listened to it twice, and it's bananas how many things that are everyday items, things that we use and we know have occult symbolism, and we still use them. I guess, so what is the point in your guys' estimation as to why this, like, for example, the iPhone, let's take that. The iPhone logo is a apple with a bite in it, which obviously is the Adam and Eve story. What is the reason behind that, I suppose?
Sometimes I think some symbolism is even just to let you know exactly what you're getting involved with. You know, or telling you, like, it's just the way to maybe explain, like, the type of magical weapon you're dealing with. And then I think there's times when, in my opinion, believe it or not, even with some symbolism, not to go back to, like, the eye and the brain stuff, but sometimes I do wonder, like, the stuff that is very much referring to that, I think, is that what kind of captivates you already? Because it's, like, an artistic depiction of something that's actually within yourself. And, you know, so does that captivate the person in a way, and then that's what gets you to, like, I guess, want these things, you know what I'm saying? Is that, like, you know, besides, like, even when it comes to, like, symbolism, different colors are going to give off different vibrations. I mean, even you can ask anybody who's probably into advertisement, I mean, there's a certain color scheme that they know to use to get, you know, certain results depending on what they're advertising. So I mean, right there, that's proof that I think vibrational energy from colors are going to affect you, make you feel a certain way when you're looking at something. But I guess, like, you know, your question of, like, you know, what's it all about? I think, like, it's kind of like a twofold thing here. It's like either keep on investigating to, like, have your own experience and figure out the world on your own, or, like, kind of like being mind fucked because you want convenience and don't want to learn it on your own, and you just end up, like, kind of being ignorant to it. I don't know. You end up getting manipulated in that point, you know. So it's like you almost allow the manipulation.
I think it begins with a question. I think when you were a child, you were curious about everything. You're curious about the world, and that curiosity ends up manifesting when you get older into why. Why are we here? What does it mean? Where do we go? And I think those questions are answered in different ways by how you seek them. And if you come upon ancient knowledge or some sort of knowledge, you have a choice. And I think Nick said this brilliantly in one of his episodes. When you come upon the answer, you now have a choice. You can use it for good or you can use it for bad. You can either use it to evolve yourself into a better human being and the people around you, or you can use it to manipulate humanity and make money. And I think what happens is that a lot of people end up saying, well, I'm going to get mine. I'm going to, if I'm here and whatever, then I'm going to get as much toys and money as I possibly can and enjoy the ride for my sake. In terms of, like, stuff with the iPhone, like how you bring it in, I believe that marketing and things like that, they already exist in the zeitgeist. They already exist in our psyche. And people who know how to manipulate the situation take advantage of that, and they fully capitalize on something like that. Would you buy something that had a banana logo on it? Would you buy something that had an onion logo on it? You know what I mean? Who's to know, right? Like, that would be a totally different thing. But if you buy something that has an apple, it kind of plays upon on so many things. And I wonder how much of it is also kind of like, you know, not a middle finger, but kind of, you know, playing upon the whole narrative of it all. But I think it's more manipulative. I use an iPhone. I mean, I'm not going to stop using an iPhone. I think because it's so much in your, yeah, I mean, it's true. I mean, because it's so much in your face, it starts to lose the novelty. But if you were to see it for the first time, you're thinking, oh my God, I would never use it. But then you see it over and over and over and over, it loses its,
shock value.
Exactly. Thank you. Yeah, exactly. And so it just becomes another thing. Insignificant.
All right. Yeah, that makes sense. And I'd like to dig in a little deeper on the whole Masons thing. Like, I guess if you don't mind, a little bit of history, because I think I can't be the only one that just hears about it every now and then, but I'm definitely curious as to, because in the conspiracy realm, Masons are reviled, you know, they're bad folks. Oh, look, he's doing the Mason sign. He's covering his face. He's doing all this, you know, that's a Mason, that guy, watch out for that guy. That guy's a Mason. And this is just me observing it all, because like I said, I've got no dog in that race or whatever you want to call it. You hear about other dudes that are Masons, seem to be like regular folk, not doing anything bad. Oh, so, yeah. but
I mean, even my
overwhelming
in the OTO, not to interrupt you, I mean, I'm sure 99% of those people were just normal people who might have just been into weird stuff, but they weren't in the know or pulling any strings, put it that way, you know.
I suppose if I think about it a little bit more, you know, just now, it could be like shit. It could be like a Catholic, you know, the average Catholic is, they're good folks, you know, average Mormon, good folks. But the deeper you go in those levels, you know, things get a little shady. So I suppose in a different kind of way, it's very similar if I'm really, you know, if I'm analyzing it that way anyways.
I mean, there's a few things. I mean, when it comes to like the Masons, I mean, there's probably like there's some things I could speak on that from like things that I've covered, like especially like some of their inner orders, but like for myself, and I'm sure it's probably the same way in mostly a lot of other places. My experience in the OTO, I mean, I'm sure it wouldn't be any different from the Masons, to where I really truly do believe, like, accepted me, you know, when I was mentioning in Masonry, there were some upper orders and inner orders that we started covering. I do think there's shit going on in those, but I think for the average person and for the most of like the lodge that I was going to and other places, I do think, like, honestly, most of those people, even if they've been there for a while, probably is still being fed bullshit. Like, I do think these orders actually do exist to pull money in from donations or lodge dues once you become a member. And like, whenever you take initiations, from my experience, I mean, you're looking at fucking $150 to $200. So it's like, you know, what the hell was that for? Like, you know what I'm saying? And then every person doing this, it's just like, you know, you're obviously trying to make money here as well. But I do think a lot of them, like a lot of people are in the dark. They're being kind of like, it's almost like the magic's on them. You know, they're not going to tell you anything of substance. Like, you're going to have to dig on your own. You know, I do think there is a psyop within these orders in itself. You know, and I think that, you know, I just wanted to say that as well, because you were kind of saying, you know, a lot of people just seem like everyday people. And I do think for the most part, you are getting that. And, you know, that's by design as well. You know, I think these orders want to keep most of their people stupid. And the higher people up are because they benefit them, probably like either politically, financially, or whatever kind of maybe agenda that they have. Like from my experience in the OTO, after you were a perfected magician, I think you're considered a perfected magician at the fourth degree. Now you can ask to go up degrees up until the fourth. There's Minerva, first, second, third, fourth, and then after that, you can't ask anymore. You have to be like asked, do you want to come up to the fifth now? Do you want to come up to the sixth? But like technically at four, I'm already a perfected magician. So like what else is after that? Like it's all like add-ons on like maybe specific beliefs, studies, and I think from things that I've seen and been told, I also think like an agenda in a sense of like a they might have like some kind of like thing that they're trying to do or an outcome that they're working on.
So you're trying to level up, prestige up. Yeah. I guess if you really, I don't know, now that I'm looking at it, it does seem like it's very similar to a lot of even religious organizations. Shit, yes. Even Judaism. I think my belief is most folks are good folks. Then you have some dudes that dig tunnels and do crazy shit, you know? So it just...
Playing Super Mario Brothers over there.
Yeah,
what
yeah.
the hell is going on there, man? That story seemed to disappear. But, I mean, it's it's very fascinating because you see folks that are highly religious in, let's just, you know, for sake of argument, let's keep it in the Christianity realm. And they look at stuff like masonry, other occult stuff, you know, that's satanic stuff, satanic worship and stuff like that. There's even people that will look at Catholics because, you know, they use pendants and rosaries and stuff like that. That you can't do that. That's not in the Bible. So there's even infighting within these groups. And again, I'm someone that doesn't have a belief system. I suppose I'm open to the possibility that there's a higher power. I just, you know, from what I grew up believing in, that's not my vibe. I respect anyone else that does, you know, go and have a belief in a certain religion or creed or whatever. That's fine, to each their own. But so as someone that's just standing on the sidelines watching it play out, it seems interesting, and that's where I'm trying to figure it out. I mean, look at the patent for the mRNA vaccine. What was it? 666. And you see these things deliberately played out. And I think you touched on it earlier, and I had William Ramsey on a couple of weeks back. Nice. And I asked him the same thing, like, why? So what's the purpose behind it? Because, you know, I'm trying to figure it out. And it almost seems like it's, yeah, we're doing it. And some of you will see us, will know what's going on. But the vast majority won't. So this is kind of our fuck you to you very few that have figured it out. And just kind of laughing at people like us that can, you know, spot it from afar. What are your thoughts on that?
You know, I'm gonna answer your question here in a bit. The secret society, so secret societies, they kind of go all the way back to even before BC. Like, talk about Pythagoras. Pythagoras in 800 BC was forming, you know, this group to learn about math, to learn about, you know, different concepts about geometry, sacred geometry and whatever. And you had these coalitions being formed by these people wanting to know more and wanting to learn stuff. And they developed their own worship system. If a theorem was proven or they figured some mathematical equation out, they would rejoice and have this ritual where they would celebrate the Tetratus. And it was like the number 10, and they revered the number 10. And then as you go throughout history, you see how these societies or these cultures started to use math with with letters, and they use an alphanumerical system. You'll hear about it like gematria or something like that. And they used these modes of communication because they worked, because they had power, because they could manipulate some sort of matter to their benefit. And so as you go in through history, you see Knights Templar, you see Rosicrucians, you see Masons, and it's usually a lot of these people that are wanting to either belong or wanting to manipulate their situation, improve their situation, or like you said, they might just be wanting to move up or evolve as a better person and not even really know that they're in a society that is actually manipulating them. And they're just basically hook, line, and sinker. They're drinking out of that red Solo cup. But I think also some of this stuff does work in terms of power, manifestation. You go into quantum mechanics and you realize that if you observe an object, you can manipulate how it behaves. And so I think all of this is kind of like a progression moving forward into manipulating the situation to their benefit. But when you talk about why do they do this, and you know, why do they put 666 with RNA, I think because, well, you learn how the number 6 is a very stable number. You learn about how it balances each other out. It could be the number of the beast, it could not be if you believe in that stuff, but it also is done because it works as well. I believe that's kind of been my thing in terms of like the whole biological aspect, looking at it that way, and then now looking at symbolism and seeing how they basically build upon each other. You start to see that, oh, that's why they worship that, or oh, that's why they use that number. And you kind of remove yourself from the belief system and you kind of see it in an objective way. So that's kind of how when I look at secret societies, how that you have that type of factor into it. And then you have the people at the top of the secret society siphoning their energy, siphoning their money, siphoning the ability to manipulate someone into doing something because they have their own agenda. And then the lower people have their own. I don't know. That's kind of how I see it with that whole thing. But
yeah, that's go ahead, Nick.
Oh no, I said that was great. Yeah.
Exquisite, yeah. it's truly fascinating.
You know, there was something I did want to add to like a few of the things you mentioned before. I already forgot your question. No, it's all right. It's probably because I smoked. But like you're even like mentioning Catholicism before, and you know, that's like even something I don't know if it's come out yet. I apologize. I actually don't even remember what shows have come out yet. But yeah, we do have like saints that we even covered that were like occultists, and like they were like open about it. But like something that we even started to notice, like from I guess covering that, was that like even in the church at some point, like people were open and like there was different studies that were accepted. Mm-hmm. Like something even changed there. Like, if you were into alchemy, you were into like numbers and all that stuff. Or like some people were even like into body parts, you know, the eyes and the brain, you know? And that was like accepted. And like some people, like I said before, I mean, they ended up getting turned into saints. You know, there's some of them out there who have grimoires, you know, and the reasons that they end up becoming saints is because, you know, you have to have this experience that gets like validated by somebody. And I truly do believe that like there, and I've said this myself, when it comes to magic, when you have a real magical experience, there's going to be commonality that people experience. And it sounds bizarre, but there is almost like certain markers that everybody is kind of basically going to experience, maybe a little bit different, but everybody will understand if they're at all be in a room and started saying the same thing. They'd be like, yeah, I know what you mean. And I think that's how like they kind of justify, like, yes, this is an experience. So like, in my opinion, they're showing that there's people who was like into polymath, people who were into Christian Kabbalah was accepted, you know, right. People who are into that, ciphers, parts of the body and like alchemy, you know, at some point they became saints of the church. You know, so that's even like interesting to look back and think about, you know, at some point, like, you know, that it very was much of a cult in a sense, or they were into stuff that would be considered the occult now.
And what if that is the psyop, is to not know that information, and therefore you stay as a lower tier, you know, because not everybody can be a chief. They need followers. They need you to basically, they need the cash cow to keep producing money, to keep, you know, producing energy for them. They don't want everyone at the top. I mean, this is true of money. This is true of school. This is true of all things. They need people at the bottom, and they don't want everyone at the top. So so to not let them know what is really behind the curtain, whether it is Christianity, whether it is Islam, whether it is Judaism, whether it is a cult, I mean, that it keeps people basically cashing in not cashing in, cashing out, and giving them what they want, I think, in that regard. But you know, and it's sad, because a lot of people think occult, and immediately I used to think that you think the occult, immediately you think devil worshiping, and until I decided to just abandon, you know what, I'm just going to look at this from a more like objective point of view and see what happens, that is not at all what's going on at all. I mean, it's almost sad that so many people don't know how powerful words are, how powerful your mind is, how powerful it is to know different subjects in different cultures, and how everybody was trying to kind of build up and move up as a person, like Nick had said, in alchemy. So and it's all required. Knowing everything is required, but they're not going to tell you that. They don't want you to know that. So
you know what I find is like even interesting, like me and her have noticed, like even in old Rosicrucians, like people who are into Rosicrucianism, and like even I could be wrong, correct me if I am, Lisa, but that Manly P. Hall that had like that image in his book of like the basically like the brain peeled open.
Yes.
And it's like, you know, like you have these people back in like the 16, 1700s, like literally putting the eyeballs and the brain inside their occult books. And nobody thinks that has anything to do with it. Like, it's kind of like, well, where did this get lost? Where did it get lost in translation?
Absolutely. The redundancy of anatomy in everything is crazy, that you think you're seeing things, because there's no way that these people are overemphasizing eye and brain anatomy in every aspect of life, but they are, because that is the center of so much of understanding, I think, in my sense. I mean, look at, they had Da Vinci paint the Sistine Chapel. Is it Da Vinci? Please tell me it's Da Vinci. I think it's Da Vinci, but he, you know, you have these people painting, you know, in what you would call God's temple, and he's painting the brain. He's painting kidneys. He's painting the eye. Why? Because he was a closet anatomist, and he knew how these things were working, and wanted to show the people in his own occulted way, this could be the path. This is the way that you can potentially understand God. You know, the whole Adam touching God's finger, and God is surrounded in a brain, or it doesn't look like a brain, but if you look at the actual anatomy, it's an anatomically correct depiction of a brain. And so I think he's trying to tell you something. I think it's all there in your face, telling you exactly how it is. But
oh, we even showed in the eyeball series how the churches are kind of depicting eyeballs and brains anyway, parts and the way it's built and the ceiling.
Yeah.
Wow.
I think so too. And you see it, you even see it, like you brought up Mesoamerica. You see it all in their culture as well. You see it in the Mayans, the Aztecs, the Incas, over and over. It looks different just because we're not used to seeing. We're used to seeing Egyptian mythology. We're used to seeing Greek mythology. But if you really look at Mesoamerican or pre-Columbian art, it's all there as well.
Yeah, I think that's even like before when I was saying, I think like if you truly have a magical experience, I do think you're almost like, again, everybody's kind of going to have like a similar experience in a way, but I do think it's like a way of kind of tapping into like this consciousness. Mm-hmm. So I think that also, if you were to look at it that way, that explains how you have people all over the world coming up with like the same ideas, but just a little bit different when there was no way to communicate. Yeah. It's because these people were having magical experiences and were just tapping into the same ideas that everybody else had a channel to.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's it's very fascinating, but I get lost with a lot of it. So I'm glad you guys are, it's making a little bit more sense. I think that's the other reason why I'm like, I start listening to it and I'm like, oh man, what brains and eyes and all this stuff. But I guess the question that I would have is, so it sounds like it's everywhere. It's depicted everywhere. And I guess why maybe it's my dumbass and maybe other people are like, holy shit, they already said it. I'm still not.
Well, you know what I think a huge problem with like people probably not like really getting it or understanding, besides like I do think to a certain extent, and it's not to make myself sound special at all, not at all, but I do think like people really won't fully get it until they probably have a magical experience. But I do think another problem with it is, and I'm not like trying to promote, I mean, I think an average person like can really decipher like if something's like really horrible or not. But I do think, especially when it comes to sex magic, that in itself I think is a psyop, because in my experience, there is no sex needed. I think it's actually an alchemical change that's being described, and especially stuff that's actually going on inside your eyeball. I think it's explaining a lot of that, and it's being said in a sexual way so people will look at it like that and think that's horrible, and you will never really try to look at it and be like, well, maybe it's trying to say something else. You would never bother trying to decode it or decipher it or look at it or investigate it, because you're just automatically going to write it off as, nope, that's like disgusting, that's satanic, that's, you know, whatever, cult, whatever, you know, you're going to brush that off. And I think a lot of times, a lot of imagery that is, I'd say, probably more like neo, like new stuff, probably from like the 18 and 1900s. I think when you start seeing a lot more of like very descriptive, I guess, negative or evil looking art, I do think a lot of times things will be also created that way. So it gets dismissed by the people who are afraid to look into the dark, to look at the supposed bad stuff and not understand what's really going on. You know, so like I did not saying like, again, that I'm trying to promote people to like go out and look at, you know, the sick fucked up shit that, you know, you see get thrown on the Instagram or Twitter or whatever you're into. But, you know, I do think, again, like when it comes to sex magic, I do think it has a lot, believe it or not, to do with like your eyeball and your pupil changing and the lens in your eye moving and your optic nerve and your brain. It actually really, in my opinion, does explain all of that. I think you see it in Crowley's Gnostic Mass, and I think you see it in some of his degrees. But, you know, if you were to just automatically write it off as you're seeing something negative, you're going to miss some of the more, in my opinion, secrets of secrets. You know, they're going to try to deter you from actually figuring out what's really going on in multiple ways. You know, like even when I was in the OTO and during the initiations, I was told the Minerval first and second degree, at least those three in a row, some sort of way at the end of each degree. I think in like Minerval might have been like, you know, you should just not shouldn't trust everything around you or something to that degree, or you should only trust yourself. Then the first one, it's like they stress that near the end, you should only trust yourself, you really shouldn't trust your surroundings. Then in the second degree, like they even like do dumb shit to you to make you like realize like you can't trust your siblings, you can't trust the way everything seems and looks. So I think they even trying to tell you that they're going to mind fuck you any way they can for you not to understand the truth. And unfortunately, again, like I just think that sometimes horror or sexuality is a way to cover up, you know, some deep occulted truth.
So I wanted to ask you about magic. I did hear an episode where you were talking about how a lot of people have a misconception when it comes to magic, and people have different definitions, but I can't remember if it was you or maybe your guest was saying that there's a lot of stuff that is magic, like prayers. Christians wouldn't consider it magic because, you know, for a lot of Christians, that, oh, no, that's satanic. But and I agree with what you're saying, you know, that is a form of magic. Could you touch a little bit on that? What is magic to you?
I'm trying to think of a way to touch on my deeper and what you were just saying right there. Yeah, prayers. For sure. I mean, that would be like magic. That would almost be the same thing as like doing mandalas over and over again. My opinion, though, when it comes to, I guess, like magic, this is again just my opinion. And I guess I could break it up in a way that, you know, people like to try to describe magic, you know, black magic and white magic, a good magic, a bad magic. I do think, in my opinion, though, when it comes to magic for a magician, the whole goal of the magician is to have an experience with God, or have a divine experience with his holy guardian angel, and then eventually, hopefully, with God. I think that unless you're just working on that and just trying to have experiences with God, it's no difference to me if someone was to pray for something or you had a magician charging a talisman to get something. That's going to be black magic, in my opinion. People may not want to hear that, but, you know, if you're lighting a candle because you want $20 and it has nothing to do with you having an experience with God, I'm sorry to say, I think that's actually black magic, which I have been guilty of plenty of times in the past when everybody starts at the same place, you know. But I do think really when it comes to magic, the whole goal is to actually have an experience with God and to like be enlightened. And then that is when, like I guess, you know, she had said earlier, that is when I think you really have like the scales of justice in front of you, where you're like, you know, I can easily start to make this something all about me and to, you know, boost my ego and I guess like take advantage of people, or can I actually just try to maybe educate people and like maybe leave the world a little bit better than it was when I got here, you know? But you could do that. But, you know, and then real quick, like even when it comes to magic, because I do like to try to get this out there because I don't think it's mentioned enough. It may sound like a little freaky, especially to some of your listeners. But like even magic in itself, I do believe that actually is like temporary suicide too. You are going to actually like force your soul kind of out of your body. You're going to like basically have like an NDE. Or an out-of-body experience, you know, like just from even experiences that I've had, like physically, like there'll be physical side effects. You know, one pupil will be bigger than the other for a few days. You might have like issues with your blood and your hemoglobin. But in my opinion, real, real, real magical experiences actually do, in a sense, in some way, include death. And then that's how you are actually having an experience with God. Then there will be visuals that come up that a lot of other people that I've, you know, spoken to or come across with my show. We have all like shared some of the same common experiences. And I do believe like that's exactly what's happening. I know that might sound like a little out there and like a little freaky, but like the thing is, it's like, yeah, you will never, ever, ever be told that going into one of these secret societies. That is not something they will ever tell you that's included with crossing the abyss, is that you're actually like having physical alchemy and you're allowing your soul to slip out of your sack. They will never tell you that. And that's what I, in my opinion, that's what happens when you have a magical experience in the divine sense. You have to go to God. He ain't coming to you. You left him. You got to go back to him.
You got any thoughts on that, Lisa?
Well, I've never had a magical experience, but I think growing up, I grew up Hispanic Catholic. You know, you're always taught to seek God, to pray to God. If you want something, ask the Virgin or ask God. And so immediately in my experience, and I think many other people's experience, it's always this longing or this wanting of communication with God. And so you kind of focus your sales on, is he going to talk to me? Do I have to talk to him? He's not going to talk back to me. I mean, how does this go? And then you go into situations, whether it's a breakup or whether it's I'm not popular or you lose a parent or you're something, and now you're seeking something existential and you want intervention. And I think at that point you become desperate or you become wanting something bigger than yourself to help and intervene. Like, I want $20. I'm going to light this candle. I need this or whatever. And I think that sets you on the path towards wanting to have an experience or communication with God. And I think this is no different than the ancients to today. They're always wanting to seek something. It's kind of like with the Aztecs. They come into winter and they see that the sun pauses around the, you know, winter solstice, and they're hoping it comes back because they want to grow their crops. And so they start sacrificing people, hoping that the sun will come back. And indeed it does come the spring equinox. Now, was it because they sacrificed all those people, or was it because it was already going to happen? Well, now we know that it was already going to happen, but at that time they didn't know. And the same thing happens with us. And I think, but there's still that wanting to communicate with God. And so you seek out these places and you seek out these moments where, or information where you're wanting to have this experience with God. And whatever that looks like is really up to you and what is on your path. And I mean, I don't think there should be any judgment any which way. That's kind of my opinion on that.
Yeah, you hear a lot lately, anyways, of a lot of people taking ayahuasca trips for that very reason, yes. To have some spiritual connection. The more I hear about it, I'm like, damn, I want to try that. Have any of you done that? Ayahuasca trips?
I have not.
We just had a guest on recently, though, that was actually, it's interesting how we were talking about like the eyes and the brain, but like we had an author on who kind of got into DMT and then started like writing books. And like he's now like at the point to like, from the experiences that he's had with that, he's like mapping like stars to like what chemical compounds and actually touching on like shots of the brains in different angles, actually showing how that's religious or Renaissance art. So like he's like, even he's through DMT, he's come back to, he's somehow, we both met in a different way to where we're seeing stuff inside our head.
Everything that we've been covering in the eye and stuff that we have talked about the brain that we will soon cover at some point is basically all of where these psychedelics take action on and allow you to cross the abyss or transcend or have a communication with God or whatever that, you know, phrase is. It acts upon those parts of anatomy that we have covered and how those parts of the anatomy that we have covered are found in art, music, religion, culture, paintings, depictions of, you know, in pictographs, whether it's in Mesoamerica or whether it's in Egypt or anything like that. So there's a redundancy in that you say, well, why the eye? Why the brain? I don't know. But if you look at psychedelics, that's the same place where it's having its mode of action. So maybe they knew something. That, you know, this is why it's repeated in art and music and everything, because if you look at maybe psychedelics or whether it's a magical experience or whether it's your own organic way of seeking God, it's acting upon these specific parts of your anatomy.
Yeah. I listen to Joe Rogan quite a bit, and he introduced me to the book, The Sacred Mushroom and the Cross. I don't know if you guys have heard of that book, but it's, you know, when you really think about the mushroom, it looks like what?
Also looks like,
a wiener. And, you know, and it's about fertility, you know, going back to many civilizations, you know, as far back as we have record of, you know, there's fertility gods in every damn culture all over the damn world. And there's a theory that Moses was, you know, when he's speaking to the burning bush and God is talking to him, some people have said, well, maybe he was under some kind of hallucinogen, you know, and so how else do you explain a dude talking to a damn bush that's burning? And so interesting theory. I mean, obviously there's no way to 100% verify any of that stuff, but it makes a lot of sense in many ways. Any thoughts on that?
Well, if you look at the psychedelics, you know, when you're talking about Joe Rogan and you're looking at the mushroom and how the mushroom looks, the mushroom itself at the top, it, to me, looks like a brain. And if you look at the mode of action of psychedelics in the cranial cavity or the brain itself, you see specific areas that it actually acts upon. And one of them feeds into the pineal gland, which everyone says the pineal gland is the seat of the soul, right? And so the pineal gland is governed by the light that comes into your eyes and tells the pineal where you are, what time of season you're in, what is the photo period, is it morning, is it noon, is it night, is it sunset or anything like that. In you said that it looks like the penis, in that if in seasonal breeders, like animals, seasonal animals, photo period is measured in the eye with the retina and fed back into the pineal. And if it is a lower photo period, like winter time, then most of the females will come into estrus and males will start to establish territories in order for reproduction to happen, in order for them to, you know, gestate and then have their offspring sometime in the spring when they can eat. And all of that is governed with light coming into your eyes, feeding it into the pineal, and then feeding it back into the reproductive system. So you look at psychedelics and it's that same exact mode of action. So it's almost like you see again the redundancy of why are psychedelics mimicking photoreception, electromagnetic spectrums or anything like that. And then of course, going back, you see it in art, you see it in music, you see it in everything else. So it has to mean something. It has to be important if you're seeing it happen over and over again.
One of the things I found interesting with, you know, that I guess it took a while for me to make the connection. And I think there's something with it, but like, it was around the time we started covering like the eyes in symbolism. And like, you know, we started showing like a lot of stuff, I guess, like the reflecting off of the lens and how the pupil changes. And then I was like, you know, this kind of makes sense of like why, like, you know, LSD with MK Ultra. And I do believe like, you know, even the dead might have been behind like trying to push LSD and mushrooms. But the government actually, I mean, there was rumors and beliefs that there was some sort of magic mushroom, but it wasn't technically, I think, in the 50s when the government actually went and found one and then told Time magazine it really exists. Believe it or not, mushrooms actually were like a fairy tale until the government told Time magazine it exists, you know. But like where the hell was I going with that? Oh, you know, all that stuff all changes your pupils and changes how light goes into your eye and then your brain processes it. So I'm like, you know, if magic does have to do with I do think it has to do with actually changing the direction of light and the way you're looking, I guess, with your eyes, you know, I see a correlation there, you know. And again, from my experiences with magic, you know, I've even done it recently with like deep meditations. I didn't take myself too far, but like, you know, my experience, you will get like one pupil bigger than the other and the other one small. So you will be like in flight and fight at the same time. Your eyes will be unyoked, you know.
That's trippy.
So
what, you had one fully dilated? Yeah, yeah, and the other one even,
like, I could send you a picture on Twitter. I took a picture a few weeks ago. It wasn't like, it wasn't as drastic as I've gotten it though, but like anybody I sent it to, they were like, yeah, I could definitely see a difference. But yeah, I had one was bigger and the other one was smaller.
Oh shit.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a side effect. But like, you have to think about, you know, Horus, you know, the avenging Horus going to war. Well, he's also a bird. So if you think about it, if he's got his spear and he's flying, going to war, he's technically fighting and in flight mode at the same time. Mm. You know, I don't think people get that, but I do think, you know, yeah. And again, like the magician, how it has like the magician card always has like a figure eight or an affinity sign. If you were to think of those as pulleys, that would be unyoked. If it was like a cylinder, that would be yoked. Everything would be moving the same. But when you twist it, that means one side's going one way and the other side's going the other way. Your eyeballs, and your eyeball does screw closed. It pulls open and across, but screws closed. So, like, am I? I know I'm probably like losing you here, but
no. I'm intrigued, man. Know,
I do think that's even showing you change with the pupil dilation, even like the snake around the egg. I think that's showing you the whole pupil, you know, twisting and turning. But yeah, I do think.
That's super fascinating. I never thought about it until you brought it up right now, and it makes a lot of damn sense. So, by all means. Keep dropping those truth bombs.
No, yeah, so I just do think that, you know, psychedelics have been used, especially by the government, on people because they know it probably does. Like, I think some of it can kind of be a cheat code in an extent to kind of push yourself close to the edge, for sure. So
I think
Go ahead.
No, I said I was just going to insert. I think the resounding thing that you were saying, what is at the top, is light. If you look at the Bible, if you look at the pyramids, if you look at all of the books in Judaism, Islam, you can go into Hindu or whatever, even the grimoires. It's all about light and the electromagnetic spectrum, and how is the way that you receive light and the electromagnetic spectrum, and it's through your pupils, it's through your eyes, and what is the actual anatomy that interprets it, and that's your brain. And so it completely circles back to all that. And so when he's talking about unyoking, it's the ability to manipulate matter in that realm of being. And then if you look at psychedelics, what do psychedelics do to your pupils? They open them. They don't constrict them, they open them. So what does that mean? They want all of the light to come in. And light itself exists as photons. They're packets of information. The most basic form of any information, primitive, primordial, whatever, is a photon. And that is a packet of light. And that is information that is going to be received by the pupil onto the lens, fed by the retina, converted, and then interpreted all completely by your brain. So light is the main thing, I think, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's like, yeah, even so. I think, you know, just for people to even that may not know, and I do think is like stuff that is like kind of shown in occultism, and I think it's some more of the deeper like secrets in some stuff, is that I think like even the fact of like once you start getting up by your optic nerve, I mean that the light now that the sun has gone into your eye, hit the lens, then reflects back, which is pretty much the whole as above, so below thing right there. Mm-hmm. If you were to think of like a lake, and then like, you know, like there was mountains or something, you'll see the reflection of the mountains on the same exact things going on inside your eyeball. So that shoots as back.
Above, and, then, below.
And then when it goes back into your eyeball, at some point, it's going to go up the optic nerve, the hyoid canal into the optic nerve. And then that is when it, like, once it goes back out, pretty much it's like an electrical impulse. Like, it basically converts the energy or the light that you're taking in and turns it into electricity basically inside your body.
Yeah, because that's the way that your brain interprets it, is through electrical signals, and then it flips it back right way. So, you know, like the whole flipping, you know, that's all happening twice.
Yeah, more mind stuff, it seems like. It's not even a conspiracy theory anymore, the whole MK Ultra trials, and the more researchers dig in, I mean, the more stuff comes out.
You know, it's so funny that you even, like, well, I guess I mentioned it earlier, but like even like with MK Ultra, my brother's wife, it was even like texting me today and asking me about like Jolly West, if I ever heard of him. I was like, yeah, of course. I was like, I did a 5-part series of MK Ultra. I don't remember which one it was, but we definitely brought him up. And then I was like, when it comes to MK Ultra now, it's like you could almost like, as long as you try to look for it, you'll actually find tons of stuff. And I guess like she didn't know that. And I was like showing her stuff, like Timothy McVeigh, like was one that's like not even a secret anymore. Like there's so many things that they don't.
Sirhan.
Yeah, it's like as long as you try looking for it and stay at it, you'd be surprised how much screwed up shit they actually admit with that now. Yeah. That's not even a conspiracy. They admit to fucked up shit in their documents.
Yeah. And you know that MK Ultra started with the Nazis here in the US, right? Okay.
Yeah. We and the Nazis that. Nick covered that. The Nazis were inspired by the American eugenicists. It's funny.
Yes.
You know, I've got a lot of questions on history nowadays and World War II. I've got a lot of questions. And some people, how dare you? How dare you? You know, and here's why. Tangible evidence. Look at all the American influence and the Germans were. I mean, you look at the Dulles brothers. The Dulles brothers were balls deep with the damn Germans. And
yes,
people don't ever talk about that.
Yes, they were.
You have these intricate relationships, and then you have Operation Paperclip, where they brought in the top minds, the elite scientists of the Nazis, and all is forgiven. We're going to give you medals, and you're going to start NASA, and we're going to stage moon landings. No one wants to talk about that part.
No.
And so it's really, really fascinating. And I mentioned this with William Ramsey a couple of weeks back. MK Ultra was one that took me a while to really take seriously. You know, I was like, oh, that's bullshit. You can't control someone's mind. It's complete horseshit. But I suppose coupling it with what you guys talked about and how maybe that's what the government has been working on, and maybe they figured it out to a T now, you know, all these decades later, where they can mold minds. They know how to use propaganda. They know what symbols to use. I mean, a lot of these school shootings, I don't know how far you guys go into a lot of these school shootings, but in my opinion, if not all of them, the vast majority of them are staged. And in my opinion, a lot of these quote unquote gunmen are MK Ultra experiments. I mean, the Uvalde school shooting, it just came in quick and then disappeared. I covered it quite a bit. I'm like, man, I bet you this goddamn kid, and everybody wants to hate him. He killed a bunch of kids. I'm like, I'm not trying to make you feel sorry for him, but how the hell do we not know he was MK Ultra? So maybe he was a victim himself. And I don't know, man. Any thoughts on that?
How is it that all of them have been surveyed by the FBI at least once?
Profile. They always write manifestos, just like
and their computers magically disappear. Yeah.
Always. Well, I'm gonna release an audiobook. I read the audiobook from David McGowan's on the Abraham Lincoln assassination.
Oh, wow.
Everyone knows the conspiracy. There was a conspiracy to kill Abraham Lincoln. 22 guys got caught, hung right away. Case closed. The thing is, that's the official narrative.
Right.
The conspiracy goes way deeper. I mean, even John Wilkes Booth had a manifesto. And so when you go back to these lone gunmen, they always have goddamn manifestos.
Yeah.
It's Looney Tunes, man. You had the Boston Marathon kid cowering by a boat writing a manifesto. Is that what you're going to do? Before you get caught or killed, you're gonna be writing manifestos. Get the
why is everybody got diaries, huh? Yeah, and
they always have a notepad and pen, I guess.
Just the manifesto.
Yeah, it's always the same shit. That's why when I hear these stories and you read them over and over, like it's the same patterns getting repeated. And one of the reasons I always say is, for the vast majority of people, the same shit is gonna work.
Yes.
You know, and so why fix something if it's really not completely broken? So, and again, maybe those patterns are done for a different purpose, for more mind control, you know, like more fear porn. Another way, I guess, another form of mind control, for lack of a better term. Using fear, fear is the biggest emotion, the most powerful emotion.
Well, yeah, when Nick and I covered how much money true crime makes a little bit on the side, we kind of talked about it. We didn't cover it specifically in terms of numbers, but
I was even going to kind of get into, like, you know, on my show, you know, I basically kind of stick to like conspiracies, which is mainly occultism, but like sometimes I do like paranormal, and I like true crime. I don't get into it too much because I don't think it's like one of the more listened to things, because people, I think, when they listen to the Occult Rejects, they don't really care about the paranormal or true crime as much. But you know, something I would like to eventually cover, but I mean, we have like touched on some stuff, and like I really do believe, especially like you're mentioning these school shootings and stuff like that. I'm not discrediting like if it actually happened. I'm not saying that is the case, but I do think a lot of them have huge occult undertones, especially when it starts coming to numerology and gematria. Yeah. And you get a lot of that with true crime as well, especially like Idaho 4, I think, with Brian Kohlberger, even stuff with the Kylie Rodney case. And I do think that it's possibly like kind of a few things. One, it's a grift. There's a big grift, I think, with people, especially, I'm just going to put it this way, like occultists that I know that are on YouTube. I do think that they grift with this because they understand that there's an occult aspect to it, and that's why it hooks people. So you get views on your monetized channel. You know, it's like kind of like riding the wave, but there's two things that, like, even with some of these crimes, like some of these like weird crimes, it almost seems like it has occultism a little bit around it. There's always like people who got like some sort of GoFundMe that are like raising money for like something that, you know, is going to a weird area instead of where they thought it was going. And I do think a lot of it, besides like people like making money schemes within the crime itself, I do think it's quite possible that we're actually like kind of in a real time psyop to actually get data on how people react to a true crime and like crime in general. Because it's like almost like people, my opinion, due to, you know, true crime, and I guess people trying to push it, you know, it's gotten pretty, and I'm not like a vanilla or pure type of guy. I love true crime stuff, but like people have gotten like really desensitized and like in love with like listening to like carnage and like the shit that people can do, you know? So like, it is like a little weird when you kind of think about it. So I do think there is some sort of like possible data, you know, going on here on how people react. You know, like some of it's like, you know, you start looking at like people start getting fans, you know, you got like women like, you know, falling in love with these dudes. And it's just like, you know, I'm sure there's some sort of information you can get out of these things to understand how the human mind works.
Well, I believe data's a new oil, like Nick said, yeah, data. Yeah. It's all data collection and it's the new oil. Who wants to buy it? And they'll buy it.
Yeah. It's, you know, that was a conspiracy theory too, you know, that your phones can hear you. Now it's out in the open.
It's true. Yeah.
You start talking about, oh shit, I'm going to buy the new Jordans coming out. And a few hours later, you're getting Jordan ads on Facebook and wherever you're online on your phone. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Your phone doesn't listen to you. Right. Yeah. It's in a lot of these things that have been called conspiracy theories. It's out there. And so I know we don't have too much longer left. I did want to touch a little bit on predictive programming, if you don't mind, because there's a lot of symbology, a lot of shit. I did a show, I think, I can't remember when, but with this kid with a fairly good-sized YouTube channel that his videos went viral. I don't know how they went viral, because he was showing predictive programming for 9/11. I think one of them had like 2 million views on YouTube. I'm like, damn, man. You know, he's shadow banned as hell now. I mean, I think he makes videos, you know, only gets a couple hundred views. So they hit him hard. But he was going over cartoons for kids and showing stuff like the World Trade getting hit by planes. You see it all the time. One show, I don't know if you guys are familiar with it, is The Handmaid's Tale. Are you guys
familiar? That show is wild.
Nick's seen it, but yeah. I haven't seen it. Yeah.
That is trippy, because
that's
I watched it.
I think it's very much communism too. I hate to say it, but
yeah. Well, it's crazy because I'm watching this. I'm like, man, this could really fucking happen.
That's what's scary. That's what's scary is that, like, no joke. I mean, that stuff really could happen.
Well, if I remember correctly, that came out before COVID, I believe, or right around right before COVID. So, you know, the premise is the women. What's the fucking place called? Gideon or
isn't that what it is? Yeah, I can't remember, but
it was some shit. And I'm sure I think there's a symbolic meaning towards the name of that. Gideon, I think it was, or I can't remember. But the point is, the people in this totalitarian, overly religious, it's a civil war that happens, and instead of the liberal North or Union winning this time it's the opposite. And now it's repressive, super conservative, religious totalitarianism that takes over the US. And to get us into a safe zone, a lot of people flee to Canada, supposedly, in this fictional piece. And I think the piece was written in 1983, which makes it even more bananas. It was written in 1983. And what happens is they never explain what happens. The women in this religious totalitarian place, they're all are infertile. They can't reproduce. And so they have to use the quote unquote liberal women that they capture as slaves and impregnate them. They do rituals. It's freaking crazy.
In the show, it seemed like a lot of the people that were actually slaves were very, I hate to say it, but were their characters were almost like typical cardboard cutout liberals.
Yeah.
It's very funny how you mentioned that, because they,
yeah, the main star. Yeah. The main star isn't too pleasing on the eyes. And then her oppressor, the meme chick, she's hot as fuck. But I don't know what the play on there was, but I mean, when you look at the series and you just have to keep in mind, to me, the whole series is predictive programming. This could really happen. What we hear about the vaccines, some people being infertile, getting cancer now. I don't know. I did want to bring that up. So,
and even before COVID, you had almost near the entire female population in the US having to resort to some sort of fertility assistance because of the amount of infertility that exists not only in males but in females within the US. So it's not too far-fetched. I mean, the movie itself, the concept that you're describing, it's not too far-fetched. And so it wouldn't be out of the realm possibility that somebody, that they would devise a situation to where you have to pay to have a child. And not just, you know, apply, but hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, right now, even if you were to, let's just say, it consult a gynecologist for IVF, IVF could run you anywhere from $25,000 to $50,000. In one go. So it's not far-fetched.
Yeah, I don't think so either. So I'm assuming you saw the same, or you're coming along from the same lines, right, Nick? That it was definitely a predictive program?
Oh, yeah, for sure. But like, even with predictive programming, sometimes I do think, like, in a sense, like, you kind of get told what's going to happen. But just, it's going to be like manipulated. Like, it's not going to be, there's going to be a lot of like lies, I guess. And there'll be like a little speck of truth that you have to like figure out yourself. But like, I do think there is a lot of, I mean, with predictive programming, it's kind of like, you know, like, well, we told you and you just didn't understand, you know, or even a way to just make almost that you're seeing more acceptable. It's not so shocking. Yeah. It's not shocking that much. It's almost like an ease into an acceptance.
And it's funny because, I mean, that's a science fictional piece. And there's other, I mean, there's cartoons of predictive programming. I think a lot of people already by now know the Lone, what is it? The Lone Wolf knockoff series of the X-Files where they crash.
The Lone Gunman? The Lone Gunman,
yeah, where they crashed a jetliner into the World Trade in March of 2001. But there's also predictive programming from their part. It seems like a lot of people have forgot about Event 201 with their role a novel coronavirus.
That's right.
That came out in, when did it come out? In
it was the turn of the century.
2019, October of 2019, just a couple of months before the official virus comes out. That's straight up. That was their version of real life predictive programming. None of this Hollywood movie shit. I mean, they put it out there as well. And again, it's one of those things. I had this conversation with my, I was with my family when I was out of town. And it's funny, one of my cousins that he was the first person that I had ever heard talk about 9/11 being an inside job. And I dismissed him. I told him, he was just rambling. And my brain shut him off. I'm like, this fucking dude's lost his mind. Fuck this shit. What is he talking about? Inside job. Like, and he lost me because he was just rambling. So I caught up with him. I hadn't spoken with him in several years, and we were talking. I'm like, dude, I got a show now. I talk conspiracies. And he's like, yeah, I don't talk about that stuff no more, man. I was annoying people with conspiracies. So I'm like, but he didn't say they weren't real. He's just saying that was his thing. But my older brother, he's like, yeah, why do you care? Maybe you're correct. But what I always tell people is the reason I care is the more people I can wake up and help wake up, the better for all of us. Because when the next bullshit comes up, when the next coronavirus nonsense comes up, we know what's happening. I mean, this is before COVID happened. I was already skeptical of the government bullshit. So when it came, was I scared maybe for the first week or two? I'm not going to lie. I was nervous. I was like, fuck, what the hell is going on? Then after a couple of weeks, I was like, all right, yeah, this is bullshit. And so that's why it's important to let people know about this predictive programming, show them examples and what's going on, because when the next thing comes up, they're already talking about the next, what is it, Disease X? Now being talked about.
There's a few things that they think they're kind of like poking around to see if it'll catch.
Yeah.
You have something going on with like measles recently too. Supposedly some measles outbreak at an airport or some shit.
Nothing ever came out of the monkeypox.
Remember that. This shit's going to go somewhere.
The butt disease. Butt disease at that. Yeah, it's interesting times that we live in. We're coming up on time. I truly enjoyed this. I mean, this is a subject that I definitely want to do more shows on. Maybe that'll be the poll, because I don't touch on it too much. Maybe not enough, but it's stuff that I want to learn more about and understand it more. And I mean, I can't thank you guys for coming on and being awesome. And again, Missy for setting this up. Can you remind folks where they can find y'all?
The Occult Rejects, that is on all major podcasts, Apple, Spotify, Spreaker, iHeartRadio and all that stuff. I think even Amazon. And then also on BitChute, Rumble, and then on YouTube, that does have the Occult Rejects and the MY Patriot Show together. Actually, even on the RSS feed, I've already merged the MY Patriot Show onto that. So basically, you're going to get both shows going there as well. But yeah, just look up the Occult Rejects and you'll easily find it for sure. Yes. Oh, and we do have you want to give them a little teaser about the site?
Yeah, we have a website coming up. It's going to be a compilation of different contributions, and it's going to, do you want to say the name yet?
Yeah.
It's called the Occult Research Institute. And so we're going to be having people contribute like blogs or information. Some people will be sharing their experiences. Other people will be contributing knowledge, such as like in Grimmore research, or like I'll have a section with biology and symbolism or gematria or anything like that. So people are wanting to learn more in more of a like deep dive sense. That's the place to go.
Awesome stuff. And before we head out, someone mentioned the war-gamed Hunter Biden's laptop at the Aspen Institute. Yeah, that's another good one.
Nice.
Did you guys hear? Yeah,
No, I had not heard that.
Yeah, a simulation of finding Hunter Biden's laptop. Nice. And then the bitch gets found. Yeah, you honestly couldn't make this shit up. It's right in front of us. And yet we get labeled as Looney Tunes and just paranoid, blah, 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 even though it's all out there. Right. Thank you guys so much, man. I really appreciate you, Mr. Nick, Miss Lisa. You guys are awesome. You guys kill it. Full of information. You guys do deep dives on the subject matter that you guys cover. So if you guys want that, definitely check them out. Thank you guys once again.